just a few closing comments, I think, that we're supposed to do on the sugya of Basar Nechira and Basar Tai. But basically, we finished with the sugya in terms of what's important about it. Again, the only thing we haven't discussed more extensively, some of the little differences between the Netziv, the Or Sameach, and the Chasam Sofer that I'll leave for your own research. But basically, they all have a similar approach with some details at variance. Namely, they really think that the problem of Shechita is related to Avodah Zarah, and therefore the need for Shechita to be linked with Davar Shebekdusha Shlamim is connected to that idea. And for that reason, they think that Nechira is actually preferable to Shechita. It isn't the Kedusha of Shechita as much as it is that element. And that's something that the Netziv Or Sameach and Chasam Sofer all share with a few pratim at play in terms of how they read the sugya. But that we're not going to go into that. I just want to mention 2 points very quickly, though, and then I want to speak about Drosh, Vekabel, Schar, the only issue that we didn't discuss, the issue of Rashi and the Rosh. That's half a Hashkafa issue as well. Just 2 points very quickly before that. Number one, Shchutei Chutz. So we touched on Shchutei Chutz when we talked about the Machlokas between the whole groups, the groups of Rishonim, the Balei Tosis against Rashi, and then you know, the different the way it breaks down, the Ramban, the Chidush Aran, and the Rajba, and then the Rambam has his own special Shita about the connection to Shchutei Chutz with our two dinim, a din in its own right of Iser Basar Tai and Shchutei Chutz, or it's all midin Shchutei Chutz, it becomes Shchutei Chutz, or it's the common denominator of Shchutei Chutz. We talk about the various possibilities. I just want to make the following hara. In Shchutei Chutz, one of the big issues is the relationship between two dinim, Shchita and Hala'a. The truth is you could violate Shchutei Chutz twice if you're Shochet Umale Bachutz. And the question, of course, that arises is why? Why is there a separate Isser for Hala'a and for Shchita? And are there any differences between Shchita and Hala'a when it comes to Chutz? So without going into much more detail than that, let's just say that in light of our discussion, it is possible that Shechita has a special connection to Shchutei Chutz, separate from Halah, precisely because of the topic that we discussed, precisely because of the connection to Basar Taiva. And just to highlight it, if we were to say that you know, that one aspect of Shchutei Chutz has to do with the Mechayev of Kadshim itself, the status of Chatzah Shel Kadshim, or the Chiluf Makom of the Mikdash for Makom Chol, or Basar Kodesh for Basar Chol, or the same performance, the performance that should have been taking place at the door at Pesach Ol Moed of the Mikdash, being improperly, being accomplished, you know, outside. So obviously those have very little to do with the concept of Basar Taiva, and one can understand that those really are dinim that have to do with Kachim. And that's essentially Tosis's argument that Basar Taiva has nothing to do with Shchutei Chutz was based on the idea that it's a din in Mukdashim. But it's possible that indeed when it comes to Halah, that's really all there is, and that is the primary Mechayim. But according to that whole group of Rishonim, Rashi, the Rambam, certainly the Ramban, less so the Rajba, well, also partially the Rajba, less so the Chidush Aran, it's possible that Shechita has this whole other dimension. It has to do with the, you know, the at least then was the opportunity to create a Davar Shebekdusha. And neglecting that opportunity, especially when it was so proximate, that one was so easy and so accessible, that's part of the Mechayev. So that already has to do with Shechita, which is, of course, the first Avoda, and which defines the Korban. That's maybe one of the unique elements of Shechita, even as one of the Dalet Avodos. On the one hand, as we explained, Shechita is a diluted Avoda, it's Ksheira Bazar. We'll speak more about that. But on the other hand, one of the unique features of Shechita, and why it really has also certain Chumras, spoke about the sugya Mevav Medbeis, which according to the Rambam may be the extra lishmas, which may be attached only to Shechita, and some other extra dinim as well, Haktaras Meimurim, other such things connected to it. It's because shechita is the it's what makes the karban a karban. It's the first of the avodos, and it's the transforming avoda. So the point is that they're the opportunity to be kachin, especially for something which is already mukdash, but in the case of the Mishkan, also because of the kir of makom, any behema. So that is the mechayev of shkutei chutz when it comes to shechita. So we can understand that even if there aren't so many different, if there are nafkamina certainly, and even if there aren't nafkamina, it's quite possible that the mechayev of shechita and the mechayev of halah b'chutz are quite different. Either way, it's something to look into and to consider. Having said that, again, we've been discussing the relationship between shechita schulin and kachim. So one other issue just comes up to be on the lookout, and that is malika. Again, one of the attractive factors in all of our discussion has been, well, you have this idea of shechita, which is the way we're matir basar behema v'chaya, and it has its parallel in kachim. Not only that, the kachim is earlier in the Torah, in Shemos, in the context of Karban Pesach and in Vayikra, for general karbanos, and especially if you want to say the kasher tzivisicha relates to that, as some Rishonim understand it, so it really works very nicely. And I even reread recently the Ramban in Shkutei Chutz, where he says, well, Noach, it's important to note that right after the Mabel, Noach was makriv a korban, and that's important for shechita too. Having said that, the problem in all of this would be malika, because in Ophos the method of kachim isn't shechita, it's malika. So here we have a discrepancy between the world of Chulin and the world of Kachin. And questions, does that cause a problem for this whole formulation? Obviously, malika is a very limited halacha. Maybe not, but at least it's something that deserves comment. So I just want to say two things about it. Number one, the Hagdama, the Prima Gadim, again, back to the earlier Mar Makomos. So one of the sfeikos that he raises is whether or not he discusses the broader question, which we went into detail, which is the relationship between the matir and the mitzvah part of shechita. So one of the things he says is it possible that when it comes to chaya and behema, that's a din of mitzvah in addition to matir? But when it comes to oath, that's already a further extension. Maybe there all you have is a din matir, no din mitzvah. So number one, then he's dochet afterwards, but he considers that possibility. I don't really see that in the language of the Rambam, which is where he wanted to put it, but at least he raises that question. At least the kasher tzivisicha in the psukim are referring to definitely behema and chaya, and not to ophos, which I guess makes this possible. So if that were to be the case, that would work in very nicely with this otherwise problematic discrepancy. What we'd be saying is, dafka, when it comes to ophos, the shechita is a matir, not a mitzvah, because it really doesn't share with the world of kachin, because in kachin it's malika, not shechita. That's point number one. Point number two comes back to the issue of shechutei chutz. When you do shechutei chutz in an oaf, how do you do it? B'shechita or b'malika? Right, that's an issue too. It seems like shechita, and the question is, why shouldn't it have to be malika? So that could be a dual question. Anyways, it seems to be a discussion between the Rambam and the Ravid in Hilchos Maaser Karbanos. They seem to be discussing this question. The Ravid raises this question: what about why wouldn't you need malikas ophos to be considered shechutei chutz for ophos? It seems to be a dual question. One is the question of shechutei chutz itself, which depends on some of the issues we've discussed, namely, to what extent does the shechutei chutz have to really be a total parallel to the ma'isa bifnim? Right, roy le pesach ol moed. Right, how strict are we about it being exact according to the precise qualifications? And of course, that depends very much on what we've been discussing. Is it a din in, you know, mixing up the makomos or equating the makomos? Is it a din in, you know, not pursuing the opportunity for Dvar Kedusha? Is it a din in doing Maisa, you know, Hekdesh, Pnim, Bachutz? What exactly is the Mechayiv of Shkutei Chutz? That's partially the question. As far as that is concerned, it belongs to a bigger issue, an issue which the Rambam and the Ravid, and of course others, but certainly the Rambam and the Ravid in a few places, seem to debate. Namely, the Rambam seems to have a wider view of Shkutei Chutz, that it relates to the, as long as we're dealing with a Chefta Shel Karban, even if we're not dealing with the, you know, Prate Avoda of the Karban. Without going into detail, but that there are several Rambams in that parak in Hilchos Maisa Karbanos that seem to point in that direction. All sorts of issues, questions of Laila, and Korban Pesach, Chutz Mizmano, all sorts of other issues that come up. That's one issue. But I think the second issue is when we talk about discrepancies, you know, how significant are they? In other words, if we're dealing with something that is you know, completely foreign to what takes place in Pesach Chol Moed, then we're less likely to have a real Shkutei Chutz. If in fact the Kiyum Avoda of Pesach Chol Moed requires Malika, but it's not because Shchita is Mufka Mekadshim, even in Ophos, even in the context of Ophos, it remains an Avoda, just an Avoda Psula Pesach Chol Moed. If it's a din in Pesach al Moed for Ophos, but not a din in the Karban itself, so then it's more palatable to say that when it comes to Shkutei Chutz, we can talk about Shchita Ophos and not simply Malika Ophos. So what I'm saying is there are two issues at play here. One is how exact and precise does the protocol need to be Bachutz relative to Pesach al Moed? B, how big a discrepancy is it, al pidin, in the lumdus of it, in other words, if we're talking about you know, certain kinds of discrepancies, whether they are laila or zman or other dinim, and now we're talking about malika and shchita. So my point is that if shchita b'chutz, even in ophos, is considered an avoda, just it's not an avoda which is machshir ophos b'pesach al moed, so then this whole discrepancy would be far less of a problem. Even if we were to say that Shkita Be'ofos is also a mitzvah, not simply a matir, which the Prima Gaudim concludes, again, based on the Psukim, I think his chiluk makes more sense, his suggested chiluk makes more sense than it does in the language of the Rambam, but in the end he thinks that Ophos are equivalent to Chai and Behema, but the fact that there is this discrepancy in Malika shouldn't bother us so much, given the fact that, as far as Shkutei Chutz is concerned, it's very possible that Shkita can take the place of Malika in Ophos. Yeah.
Just
with
regard to the Lashon Rambam, he has like different like ribuim to include Chaya and
I think that's what the Prima Gaudim is getting it from.
Right. So just in terms of by Chaya, he makes an equation. That's the whole thing that we talk about in Rabbaz.
Right.
But by Ophitas, is the Hekesh is that the Shvichas Dam should be like the Shvichas Dam of things. I thought maybe a little bit.
So you're saying
less of, it does maybe sound a little bit like,
yeah, no question. That's what the Prima Gaudim 100%
calls Shvichas Dam as opposed to
right. I didn't bring the language of the Rambam, but you're absolutely right. I mean, Perak Aleph Halach Aleph we're talking about. So that's where the Prima Gaudim like gets it from.
It's like the Rambam being a vicious of Kiddushin, but it's like a level. There's like two different levels of being imports,
or three,
right?
Yeah. Or two levels of imports, right? I agree, and that's where the Prima Gaudim, that's what the Prima Gaudim is basing it on. Without going into so many, you know, in so many details, he reads the language of the Rambam and he says, you know, is this extra clearly looser hekesh? You know, when you take that extra step, do you end up dropping the mitzvah part of it for the matir part? He's reading it exactly the way you're suggesting. Then in the end he says, maybe not. I'm just saying, to me, it didn't sound so compelling to begin with, but I do agree that there's a, you know, that there's a drop-off in the intensity of the hekesh. But ad kedei kach that it's not a mitzvah, it doesn't sound that way. And it's safer mitzvahs, it certainly doesn't sound that way. There he also mentions the behemah chayv of, right, even as he's counting. Yeah. So your diuk is correct. That's where that's the food for thought in the Prima Gadim. I'm just saying, in the language of the Rambam, even though it is looser, I don't really see it so much. And Sefer Mitzvot, I certainly don't see it. I think based on the psukim, with Kasher Tzivisicha, you know, is in the psukim, you have Chaya, because we're making the comparison to Katsviva Kayal, and definitely we're talking about Behema. Well, what's missing in the psukim certainly is Ophos. If you want to say the Kasher Tzivisicha is critical to the whole thing, then I think it's a stronger argument. So basically, we have three perspectives, essentially, about this question of what do you do with Malika, either the Prima Gadim Zava Mina, and maybe more based on the psukim, or a little on the Shonas of the Rambam, or the question of Matir versus, that's Matir versus Mitzvah, or the question of how much of a discrepancy there really is between Malika and Shechita, even in Ophos, even in Kadshim, the question of how you understand the discussion regarding Shechita Kodesh. Okay. Finally, the last point in that sugya that we didn't discuss, and that is the question of Drosh, Bekabel Schar. So we should do it, so we should be Drosh, Bekabel Schar. Which, as we'll explain in a minute, doesn't just mean, you know, to add to our good record, although there's nothing wrong with that either. So we have the Gemara here. The Gemara has the Safek about Knisa L'Eretz Yisrael. Right? So the Gemara's Safek is what will happen upon Evari Basa Nechira Shechnisu. This is by Rabbi Yirmiyah. Evare basa nechira shechnisu Yisrael imaim la'aretz ma'u. Right, what happens when there's a change? And as we already noted, the Rambam dropped the safek, and we made a suggestion or two why he did that. But that's the safek of the Gemara. So Rashi has the comment here that this is based on, since this is just history, Mi'am Rinan Kelser, etc., Udrosh v'kabel scharhu shatzrichin anu lamad ala emes afal pisha kvar avar. Okay, so Rashi says this is in the category of drosh v'kabel schar, because it happened, and it's important to know what happened. Okay, and the Rosh, as we also know, Miskolek, what simon is it? Chaf Gimel, right? Yeah. V'lo nihirali, the dafka lemizbar kroy darshinan, afal pisha kvar avar. Avlekvo abaye b'shas, b'davar shem b'tzarech lo ashkecha. So this is a very fascinating exchange between the Rosh and and Rashi. What exactly is going on here? So first of all, the Rosh's point about Mikra, I think, is very interesting. It seems like the Rosh is saying, what exactly? The schiluk between Mikra and Talmud. How would you explain it? Eitan?
With regards to halachic issues or Talmudic issues, one is always learning in order to learn about halacha that is practical or potentially practical value. Or in regards to learning Tanakh or learning Torah, you could try to interpret the psukim, and that has value in and of itself. Get to the shot of the
right. So one possibility is, so basically
different criteria, sort of.
So one way to look at this Rosh is that the Rosh is making an important distinction between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebal Peh. And basically what he's saying is that when it comes to Torah Shebal Peh, the substance is important, right? Not just not just effort, let's say. And there's no intrinsic value to just, discussing issues surrounding Torah Shebaal Peh, right, unless there's some sort of concrete benefit or payoff. When it comes to Torah Shebichtav, understanding the words always is a benefit in its own right. That's what you're saying, Eitan? Something like that. So, of course, this could be highlighted, but in a much more extreme form. The Rosh isn't going this far, by the famous comment of the Baal HaTanya in Shulchan Aruch HaRav, in Hilchos Talmud Torah, where he goes so far as to explain that if a person were to, if a person were not to know Hebrew and he would not know the words that he's saying at all, he may not even know the general topic, but he would read Torah Shebichsav, he would involve himself in a Kiyum in Talmud Torah. But if he were to take out, you know, a Gemara Chulin or Brachos, for that matter, and just, you know, read and not understand what he was reading, he'd be wasting his time. In other words, Torah Shebichsav, the words themselves, attaching yourself to the words of Torah Shebichsav, is already what the Rambam called the Achdus HaMaskil VaHamuskal. It's already a Kiyum Torah, a connection to Dvar Hashem. But the Dvar Hashem of Torah Shebaal Peh is based on Havana, on the concepts, they're not the words. And therefore, attaching yourself to the words without any conceptual or substantive or practical benefit is less significant. Now, of course, the rush is not going as far as the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. I'm not saying it disagrees with the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, I'm just using Shulchan Aruch HaRav as an extreme to highlight what may be the idea of the rush. Of course, the rush is not saying that you don't have to understand. It's quite possible that the rush, you know, would tell you that if you read Mikra, you didn't understand a word you were writing, you were reading, that would also be a waste of time. It's possible. But what he is saying is that at least understanding the psukim, knowing what went on in the psukim, is intrinsically significant. Whereas in Torah Shebaal Peh, it's some sort of benefit, some sort of accomplishment is necessary. Yeah.
Is there any reason why you don't want to understand the rush as simply formulating an opinion of what Rav Asi put into the Talmud, not regarding his philosophical understanding of Torah Shebaal Peh versus Torah Shebaal Peh?
It seems to me like he's saying more than that, not just what he happened to put in there, but I think what he happened to put in there because otherwise it wouldn't be meaningful. I hear what you're saying. Dafka lemizbar kra darshinan, aval likvoa baya b'shas, b'davar she'en bo tzorach lo ashkechon. You're saying lo ashkechon means, you know, my information about the editorial processes, they just wouldn't do such a thing. You might be right. I understood la'ashkechan meaning in a more, you know, with an exclamation point, meaning in principle we wouldn't do such a thing because, you know, it's meaningless. Now, what's Rashi's response to this? So I think, yeah, Daniel?
I was just asking, does Talmud have to mean all the Torah Shebaal Peh or just specifically Shas? I mean, does Shas...
Right, I guess this is, will be the Nafka Mina. I understand that Talmud here just means, you know, in a general sense, Torah Shebaal Peh. But I could be wrong. It could be I'm wrong. But, right, the way I'm understanding it is that, you know, the question is meaningfulness, significance, not so much a particular work.
Well, then could there be a difference in the meaningfulness you would find, let's say, in Shas, as opposed to, like, Medrash or something?
Right, so basically what I'm suggesting is that it's all the same for the moment. But right, if it has to do with an understanding of the editing of Shas itself, then in theory, different works could be based on different premises. So I think it's a good point, and it's a good way to highlight the nafka mina of what the two of us are saying. Okay, now I think that it's possible. Let me take a step back first. What is Rashi's response to this? So again, according to what you're suggesting, Rashi thought that Ravina and Ravashi, engaged in impractical speculation as well. Okay. Let's take it from my point of view for the moment, and that is, again, I already mentioned, I think, that I think the best way to understand Rashi is based on the Rav's understanding of the idea of Drosh Mekabel Schar in Ish Halacha, which I don't think is a chiddush. I just think it's typical of the approach of Brisk, and in a very compelling way. And that is that when the Gemara says things about, like, Ben Sora Morer or Yorni Dachas, Lohoyu Velo Nivru, right, they v'lo yiyu, right, they never happened, they never will happen, you know, but we learned them drosh v'kabel schar, so the Rav's comment is, you know, is this just, again, to rack up points, you know, credits on our permanent record, so that, you know, if we need the schuyos, we'll have them, and next Yom Narayim come around, you know, we'll be in more fortified and better shape. No, it probably doesn't mean that, the Rav argues. What it really means is that there are conceptual gems, there are concepts embedded in the parshios of Ben Sarur Mora and Yirani Dachas. And whether or not there ever was or will be such a case is irrelevant to the Din Torah, to the Dvar Hashem, to the values that are there. And I think that Rashi would suggest that that's the pshat of Drosh v'Kabel Schar here as well. Maybe there is no nafkamina, but conceptually it's important issue to understand, you know, the transition of Basar Nechira from the time of the Midbar to Eretz Yisrael, what the nature, which was the exception and which was the rule, according to Rabbi Akiva. We'll explain in a couple of minutes, the Iser or the Heter, and basically was it an Oser, or the removal of a matir, was it, you know, what exactly is that relationship and that transition? For that alone, it's important. Now, surely the Rush doesn't deny Ben Sorer Mora and Irani Nachas. He knows that Gemara in Sanhedrin of Joshua Kabelskar as well. So it seems like the Rush's comments are limited to history. In other words, if you have a parsha, which never will be, never was and never will be, that's an issue of abstract halacha versus practical halacha. The Rosh is not saying anything that is impractical is unimportant, right? You could have something that is abstract. What he's saying is, what it seems to be saying is, something that is historical only might be insignificant. And that in two senses. Number one, you never know in Ben Sora or Moreb, you know, even if it was Lahoya but Lo Nivra, you never know whether it's going to be Lo Yiyah. And even if you do know that it's going to be Lo Yiyah, so one can argue that, so it's clear that the Torah wrote it, not just so that we know how practically to deal with the Ben Sora, Moreb, and the Irani Dachas. Clearly, the reason that the Torah wrote it was to provide guidance and direction and values. Unlike the more practical areas of Torah, where there might have been other pragmatic reasons, maybe even some that, you know, compete with the concepts and the values. But ironically, if you have something that is significant only in theory, only in the abstract, so clearly it's legally, morally, value-wise, totally relevant. Okay. People don't often see it that way, but I think that's a conclusion. So Rosh would have no problem with Ben Sora or Mora and Irani Dachas. But I think what he is arguing is that history, meaning what transpired, how important is that? We care about the concepts, the norms as they have prevailed. The ones that have prevailed are the ones that are our koveya, our values. Why do we care about a particular moment in history? So again, in Torah Bichsav, where the story itself is important, not the legal information. So, you know, if this is what happened, then that's surely, you know, part of the words of Dvar Hashem, and that makes it significant. That's why I gave the example of Shulchan Aruch HaRav, even though I don't think you have to go so far. But if you're talking about history in halacha, not in mikra, is history per se important? Now Rashi's response probably would be, I think Rashi's response would be, that if it was only history, you could relegate it only to history. And this has happened, this is what happened, you know, ma'da avar, ma'da hava, and in Ochanami. But oftentimes, history, the way that a concept evolves, or the way that things come about, is not something to be relegated only to history or even to the periphery. Even in the, you know, the psukim that we just read and reading now in Parshas HaShavua, or getting back to our own topics, you know, I've spoken about this in the past. The famous Medrash in the beginning of Bereishis, you know, but why Torah begins with Elohim and then it shifts to Hashem Elohim and then Hashem, you know, B'tchila, the world was created B'midas Sadin. Then the switch took place to Midas HaRachamim, or Rachamim B'din, or Din B'Rachamim, whatever. Why is that important, as long as the switch took place? So I think the idea is not only because, you know, it's b'mikra, even the Rosh agrees that it's important to understand what the psukim mean. Of course, is why the psukim written there. The point is that even if the world required midas harachamim to temper the midas hadin, the idea that initially the world was created the midas hadin remains an important value. It remains a certain ideal that we strive for, that we rehabilitate, you know, in very important times, whether it's Yomim Tovim or points in our own lives, either crises or great spiritual opportunities. Knowing that the world was created initially with the idea of Midas Adin is very, very important. Right? This coming parsha, we're going to read about the Mabel, right? The recreation of the world. So you could ask the question, you know, so why bother with Bereishis? Why not just start the Torah with Parshas Noach? You know, but obviously, again, the values and the ideals of not only the history of man's downfall, you know, obviously we can learn much from that, but also some of the ideals, even despite the changes, were important, including what we've been discussing, which is the question of Basar. Right, we spent time to try to explain that originally Basar, at least in the understanding of many, was prohibited, and it was only allowed in the context of the Mabel. So today it's allowed. And as a microcosm, you know, so we know it's even further. There was the time of Adam, then there was a time post-Mabel, right? And then there was the Midbar, which is what we've been discussing. And then there was Knisa Eretz Yisrael. So we have all these phases. So one could look at it as simply history, right? Not that there's anything wrong with that, but obviously its religious significance and its halakhic significance would be limited. You could say this is just, you know, the way it all happened. But the past is just that. It's just the story of how we came to the present. Or you could say the fact that there was that initial prohibition puts the whole context of a heterochilas basar in a different light, as we've been trying to explain. It's connected to kudshim, it's a way of elevating. We haven't turned our back on the ideal completely. Let's remember that the Ramban, in the context of Shkut Echutz and Vayikra Yud Zayin, was trying to explain the pasuk that says if you ignore Shkut Echutz, it sounds like you're Chayiv Misa. And the Ramban said, yeah, because by abusing the proper way of Achilas Basar, what you're really doing is you are hearkening back to pre-Adam times where this would constitute murder because you don't have a matir. That's the Ramban basically saying that the pre-Noach history is important for the din of Shkut Echutz all those years later. So again, highlighting it just further, Rabbi Yosef even Palat, as we discussed, right, when he was trying to figure out, you know, when you do and don't say a bracha, and he said, oh, if it's an Azara, you're not going to make a bracha. You know, basically you make brachas on Kiyumim, not on Isur. And what about Shkita? So as we discussed, he came up with this idea. Well, in the Midbar, right, there was a heter, according to Rabbi Akiva, there was a heter basa nechira. There wasn't nevela, or there was a heter nevela, or they removed nevela through nechira. Two ways to read what he's saying. And that was separate from shechita. Shechita was limited to kadshim. So then he says, oh, fine, that's great, except for one thing, and that is, that's a nice piece of history, but who cares? Meaning, good, in the Midbar, Shechita was connected to Kadshim, then it required a bracha. You're really going to tell me, because we made a bracha in the Midbar for Shechita, so now in Eretz Yisrael, once there's Knisa Eretz Yisrael, and there's Isur Baso Nechira, and the only way to remove Nevela is through Shechita, right? We still cling to the Nusach HaBracha of what it was when it had a totally different meaning. Why should we? Basically, what was his argument? History here is interesting, but legally insignificant. Right? But what we've tried to show throughout, maybe not. Maybe these transitions, right, are important. Richuk makom, kiruv makom, you know, however we understand them. Compensation, different opportunities, whatever the case may be. What we've tried to suggest is, like the Rush in Ksuvas, that the connection to Kadshim, right, remains relevant for Chulin. And I would just add for the Rabbi Yosef even Palat. What happened in the Midbar continues to drive conceptually what's going on today when it comes to Shechita. Again, the Rabban talked about the Birchas HaShechita in Bereishis, in Parshas Bereishis, when he talks about the Iser Lechol Basar. He says, yeah, the Birchas HaShechita, the Nusach HaBracha, is connected to that whole story. History, but history which is relevant. So I think that basically what's going on is that it's not that, you know, Rashi, you know, likes the Isha Halacha approach, that Drosh V'Kabel Skar is about values. And the Rosh says, if they're nafkamina, I want to hear it, and if not, you know, then I don't care. I don't think that's what's going on at all. I think what the Rosh is saying is, basically, history, in most cases, is about the past. And it doesn't reflect on the nature and the values of the present. Unless there's going to be some nafkamina, which is another way of saying also that it isn't just history, but what happened in the past is paradigmatic. It's a model, it's a blueprint for values that prevail in halakha today. In a way, the Rush, by demanding nafkamina, isn't saying, you know, halakha has to be practical. He's saying that only if there are nafkamina, either for these particular halakhos or in general, is that piece of history significant. Whereas Rashi's saying, even without nafkamina, the history could end up being important. So I think this is really what's going on. Let me just highlight it in a slightly different way. This is an issue that comes up in other places. In the Hagdama to the Sefer Emuna Rama, which is written by the first Ravid, the author of the Sefer Kabbalah. He wrote Sefer Kabbalah. He wrote Emuna Rama. So he also has a line in that Hagdama where he speaks disparagingly of people who spend all their time, you know, figuring out Talmudic cases. The Chovos HaVavos has a similar line in Hagdama to Chovos HaVavos. So again, I like to contrast those two to the, I think, much more problematic comments of Rabbi Yosef Ibn Kaspi. Rabbi Yosef Ibn Kaspi had a famous essay in which he, you know, essentially belittled Havayas Dabayev Arava as being, you know, kind of, you know, pots and pans, spoons and fleshik spoons. How can you compare that, you know, to the big questions? He meant, you know, the big Aristotelian philosophical questions, you know, which those who are capable should really be engaging. That was Rabbi Yosef Ibn Kaspi, who was a, you know, interesting but a very problematic thinker. Basically, he was saying Havayas Dabayev Arava are, you know, not as significant. Basically, they're technical. You may need to make sure that you don't violate the halakha, but beyond that, they're not really of, let's say, loftier or more idealistic significance. I don't think that that's what the Emuna Rama and the Chovos HaVavos had in mind. I think what they meant was that there are hechatimtzis that you can, you know, conjure up in your mind that reflect different approaches to the halakha, and that's fine and good and very valuable. That's what we do. That's really Havayas Dabayev Arava. And then sometimes you could just, you know, get caught up in details and cases and just, you know, examples. Because if you want to make charts, you know, all day about, you know, potential yibum, relationships, tsaros and so on, I mean, you could probably do that. The question is, once you've mastered the rules and the principles and you know how to apply them when you need to, and you also know what the concepts are, so spending time just, you know, calculating more and more cases is not significant. I think that's what the Chovos HaVavos and the Emuna Rama had in mind, as opposed to Rabbi Yosef Ibn Kaspi, who is really speaking about halachic thought versus philosophical thought. The Rush, in other words, I think is saying something here that is very, very limited. I think he's assuming that if there were no nafka mina, then this would just be a matter of history, and as a matter of history, trying to conjure up nafka mina of what took place at the Midbar when it's no longer relevant is unimportant. And Rashi's arguing and saying that, you know, this particular history is significant conceptually too, because how we understand the transition to Heter Basar Nechira and from there to the Iser Basar Nechira and Knisa L'Eretz Yisrael surely says something about Shechita and Basar Taiva and all the and the relationship to Kadshim, etc. Yeah.
So then when Rashi says Joshim Kabbal Star, when he says Kabbal Star, he means Star in regard to actual Nachshaminis and Halacha.
Yeah, I'm suggesting that Rashi doesn't mean, again, points on our record. He means that this is a drosh v'kabel skar like Ben Sora or Mor, which I'm assuming, like the Rav, that that's what it means. Namely that, although there's no longer any nafka mina because that period of history is gone, drosh v'kabel skar because it sharpens our understanding of the concept. That's what I'm suggesting. And I'm suggesting that the Rush doesn't disagree with that. He just thinks that in this particular case, it happens to be merely history. Okay. Having said that, let's go back to the Rush itself. So the Rush himself comes up with two nafka mina, which are rather shocking in a way. Namely, what are the nafka mina, Josh? In the Rush? He has two nafka mina. He says, well, it wouldn't be here if not for nafka mina, which we just discussed, and here they are. And then when you see them, what's that? Yeah. So what is that? What's that? He has two nafka mina, right? One is if you create an iser, right? You're miskayv, let's say neder of some sort. Shvua, neder, you're miskayv yourself
for a certain time period.
For a certain time period. So what happens to the, you know, to what came before? What happens to that chefza which came before? Correct? That's number one. And the other one is the bezin makes a takana and they're oser something at a particular time. What happens to the remnants from the prior period? That's the Rush. It's not clear whether these two deos argue or they're one and the same. That's one issue. The Nota Bihuda and the Tshuva that they all quote in the back here, if you look, they all quote this Nota Bihuda, the Mitzvah Eisan, and the Gilyan Marsha. Everybody's quoting this Tshuva, the Nota Bihuda, and Tinyana Yaredeya Simen Samach Dalet. So we'll see in a minute, the Nota Bihuda suggests that maybe there's an argument, maybe there's a disagreement reflected in the two deos and in the Rush. The Amshel Shlomo quotes this Rush and says he thinks the second answer is better than the first, because the first should be, you know, Benadarim Hochim Achar Lashon Bnei Adam. The Shach in Simen Reish Yud Ches Sifkat and Gimel says he disagrees with the Marshal. He says, of course, the Rush knew about Benadarim Hochim Achar Lashon Bnei Adam. What he meant was, in a case where it's neutral, what is the default in creating Isurim? So the Shach disagrees with the Amshel Shlomo. But in any case, some discussion about the relationship between these two answers. I'll speak about the Nota Bihuda more in a minute. So what do you think? Is this these two answers obvious, good? Ezra? What do you think? I mean, you read the Rush. Ari? Adam? Just I'm asking for an opinion.
The Hira might have been similar to Shechita at that point. So it would have been Batir, Lubas, or Lagamri. So no matter what you would help that, asking yourself in the Dharam wouldn't necessarily make a difference for our case.
I mean, it should be different.
Wouldn't be
the amazing thing about this Rush is that the Rush took a. That's what is Rashi's Drosh for Kabbalah Skar? Again, it doesn't say very much. I mean, the way I'm imposing on Rashi. is that basically this this suffek, which is why I think the Rambam, remember that the Rambam dropped it, right? The Rush might say the Rambam dropped it because it was no nafkamina, but I'm assuming the Rambam dropped it for other reasons, namely because it became obvious once, you know, he took different stands in the whole Shaka Vitari, the Sugya, as we discuss in the Rambam. Okay. But what's amazing, the Pashas is that this is a question about Basar Nechira, right? The Isur Knisa, the Knisa L'Eretz Yisrael, which is the exception, which is the rule. What about, you know, what was it, an Isur Gavra? What exactly happened there? Actually, the Nor Buda has another interesting line, let me just mention. The Nor Buda says, the Suffolk in the Gemara is about Achila, it's not about Tumah. When it comes to Tumah, he says, it's a Dover Pashut that you're not going to say that it's Nevela L'Mafreya. It might be Macholas Asuros Mikanu L'Haba, but it's not going to become a Nevela Mikanu L'Haba. If Bishas Maisa was Nitar, right, and it didn't have Tumas Nevela, it might be Macholas Asuros Nevela. So go back on the list, which we discussed already, right, the relationship between Macholas Asuros and Tumah V'Tahara in Nevela. We talk about, you know, other things. Right, I talked about the question of Egla Rufa and Dechiyam and Atzuk, you know, in this context, and of course Nechira. So the Inod Buddha says, it's Dover Pasha to me that when it comes to Tumah V'Tahara, the Basa Nechira that you brought into Eretz Yisrael is not Nevela. Only Shaila is about Macholos Asuras. That's Inod Buddha. Nor Buddha also says, it's a Dover Pashut to me, and I can't believe that the Rush would have any suffake, that, you know, what happened at the moment of Matan Torah? You can ask the same question. Right? He had all sorts of things that were mutter, and then the Rabbanu Shalom gave a big clap on the mountain, and he said, Kolos of Rakim, and, you know, he said, you know, the following items are now Asur. So let's say you had some remnants from before. Does this come under the category of the suffix of Basar Nechira? How come the Gemara didn't have that suffix? At least according to the Rush. Why did they have that suffix? What? Why?
Because from the Torah, also on the Torah, you didn't know what was going to happen afterwards. Here you knew that when we were going to come to that Israel, certain things were going to be other stuff and certain things were going to be other.
Because the gap in between.
I mean, you're not saying you knew. I mean, we had the Torah. We were told when you come there to Israel, this is going to happen.
Right.
So you knew that upon coming to Israel, these things were going to be usher to the Nefira.
And therefore?
Pretty much the Torah, both on the Torah, you didn't know.
Because what you're saying for, there were anusim. That's the best.
There's no pre-knowledge to it.
And therefore, who said pre-knowledge is important? The question is when the Ribbono Shel Olam is.
You're not going to go create laws and then say those laws apply. But
I don't get it. So from now on, you can only eat. You could eat the nevela yesterday, and once Rabbanu Shalom said no, so you can't. On the contrary, I don't get that at all, actually. It should be the opposite.
No.
At Matan Torah, the Rabbanu Shalom said no more nevela. So for sure, you can't eat nevela anymore. Even if it's a nevela from yesterday, that you know that you did it, you know, or trefa or macholas asuras. Nor Buddha is saying no one ever said what happened at Matan Torah. To all the things that were previously mutter, not new ones.
You would have created serum upon things that you already have once you created a new set of laws.
Once
you're already holding this meat, you create a bread.
You're holding the meat. You're about to bite it with a bracha.
Right.
And then the Rabbanu Shalom says Matan Torah.
Right.
So everybody will agree. Says the Nord Beauty, you got to throw it away.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to say the opposite? Wow. Okay. So. Yeah, I mean, that's what he says. Again, he doesn't have evidence for it. He just says it. Now I understand where you're coming from. You want to say the opposite. He's saying no. He's saying it's a davar pashut that at Matan Torah, everything becomes asur, even the things that are remnants. Okay, that's his point. You're saying the other way. Okay. So really, what's going on here? So what's amazing is, follow, let me just make it clear. For Rashi and the simple reading of the Gemara, this is a very specific question about Basar Nechira. And it has to do with the things we already discussed, which I don't want to repeat again, namely, It didn't have a matir, didn't need a matir, or it had a matir? If it had a matir, what do you want from this? Right? And so on, which is why I think the Rambam dropped it. Because the Sfeikos just changed once the Rambam said we have to reread the Sugya. The Drosh for Kabbal Skar is about all this, meaning what was the exception, what's the rule, what's matired, what's osered. Does this have to do with Nedarim or Takanos in general? It's a universal issue. The huge chiddush of the Rush is that the Rush made this something universal. Now, by making it something universal, we need to understand it better. So that's where the Nodi Yehuda came in. Nodi Yehuda said, I can't even believe that the Rush made this universal. Rush is going to tell it, because why then is the suffix about Matan Torah? He said it's a Dover Pashut about Matan Torah. And it's a Dover Pashut in the other degree, in the other direction, about Tumas Nevela. That's a Nodi Yehuda. So what is a suffix? Do you solve the Nodi Yehuda?
Oh, no. I think that for the Rush, you can be Machalik. He's not really making it universal. He's saying that there's Matan Torah and there's everything else. Everything else would include Knesset or Israel, would include Takanos Kastin, or an individual taking a neder upon himself. But Matan Torah represents a revolution.
Okay, so number one, you could say Matan Torah is, you know, that's a single moment, and that changes everything. For better or for worse, depending on whether you told like Dani or like the Nodi Yehuda, right? But Matan Torah is like a moment in, you know, Bishvil, you know, HaTorah, Shanikra, Reishis, you know, Yom Hashish, all the Midrashim that Rashi quotes in this week's Parsha, right? Everything was all about Matan Torah anyway. So either it was anticipatable all the time, because we were always gearing for it, or it came as a thunderclap and it changed everything. Six, whichever way you want to say it. That's one way to look at it. The Nodi Yehuda has another chiluk, very interesting chiluk, which is, he says, listen, he says, the problem with Basar Nechira is that it's so unusual. Namely, it's post-Matan Torah, and you have a change later. You have this limbo period. So it's not saying what you're saying. You're saying something different. In other words, it's post-Matan Torah. At Matan Torah, we know that it's going to change. It's going to change in X amount of years, right? Or upon a particular event. So we know that it's going to change now, but it hasn't yet changed. That's the Rush. How's he medayik that? He says, if you look carefully at the Rush, I don't know whether it's compelling, the Diyuk, but I just think it's fascinating. He says, if you look at the Rush, why does the Rush speak so much? Right? He says, why does he have the words mizman yadua ve'elach, says the Nodi Yehuda? Why didn't he just say Adam osar atzmo now, takef, miyad, right now he makes a neder. For now on, no more, whatever. So the Nodi Yehuda, this very, I mean, it's fascinating. He said, if that would be the case, it would be like Matan Torah. Right, not according to Daniel. Right? And not according to Dani either. This is the Nodi Yehuda talking now. He says, it would be like Matan Torah, because it would be immediate. Anytime you have an immediate change, so, you know, it's all-encompassing. But if you have an anticipated change, so what's the point? The anticipation, or probably not? The limbo. It's a fascinating question, the way he understands it. It's a limbo period. You have a limbo period. It's going to change as yet to change. So the question is, what impact does that have on the remnants? I would say, he doesn't say this exactly, but I would say that it's the following kind of a question. I mean, in general, the Nodi Yehuda, in general, the Rush, I say, universalizes. So, Nedarim are the same as Takanos. Right? And in part, that's what bothered the Amshel Shlomo too. Dibur Torah Kelashon Bnei Adam. That's the same as the Takana. But I would say even more, and every Takana is the same as every other Takana. Some Drabanans are different than others. Good, Kein Doraisa, but sometimes the Kein Doraisa then will depend on the particular Doraisa. Right? Maybe a Drabanan Takana, which is an extension of Doraisa A, in theory could work differently than a you know, Kein Doraisa of Doraisa B, just because Doraisa A and Doraisa B are different. What do I mean in particular? The question here is, although it's hard to pin it down, right? Osrim, Matirim, that's part of the question. Isurei Gavra, Isurei Heftza, that's part of the question. Let me explain each one, but each one is not clear either. Are we talking about, we're talking about something that all of a sudden becomes becomes Osir, right? So you could say that as an Isur Gavra, maybe you could say, we could argue the opposite too, I think in more sense to say, as an Isur Gavra, everything becomes Osir. As an Isur Heftza, you can't turn your back on the previous status of the object. The new ones become Isur Heftza. I don't think you have to say this. I'm just thinking aloud. Right? So you might say, from a Gavra, from an Isur Gavra point of view, the change should be total. From an Isur Heftza point of view, you need a new crop. That's one way to look at it. Right? Another way to look at it is exactly the opposite, I have to confess. Isur Heftza are absolute. You're talking about a different status. Status changes, we don't care about history of a particular piece. Now we're saying this is Nevela. If it's Nevela, it's Nevela. It's no different than the Nevela, you know, of tomorrow. Isurei Gavra, we can be more flexible. There are Matirim on Isurei Gavra. So I'm not sure which it is. Yosef came to visit me before the break, and we were talking a little bit about this on the Oser Matir perspective. I think there also it's very hard to pin it down. Right? On the one hand, you might say, if the limbo was a heter, in the sense of there being a, it was a matir, not just that there was no iser. If there was no iser, then you could say, oh, well, now there's an iser. So you don't have to overcome the previous status. The previous status was just neutral, just that there was nothing. But if there's a matir originally, they took this thing which might have been iser and they made it mutter. Right, so that's not so easily overturned. They might impose, or they might change the rules now, but that which was matir is matir. Right, that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is the opposite, and that is to say that you need an oser, and to be oser something, you have to be oser mitchilas briyaso, mitchilaso. I don't know which is right. I really don't. Bandied it back and forth many times. But I'm just pointing out that there are certain meta halachic questions here. I'm not sure which direction they go, but Isurei Gavra, Isurei Heftza, something which is automatically osur, something which is osered, something which is automatically mutter because there's no oser, something which is matired, which should be relevant to this question, what happens at a point of time and change. Now, the Rosh himself, I think, is really speaking in these very universal terms. And that's why I think it's so difficult about it, because one might have said, as you correctly say, you know, even if Drabbanan is arcane Daraisa, but which Daraisa? There certainly can be a difference between Neder and Takana. I thought originally that the Rosh is only speaking about things like Neder, because they are, you know, man-made and Isurei, Heftza, maybe it's connected to the question of Hashem Aretz Imloah, Hatvasa Benedarim. I think it's possible that that's the case. But either way, the universalizing of the Rosh is, a huge chiddush. Either way, the Noda Behuda's distinction, I think, is very compelling. I just don't believe it in the Rosh, even though I think his diukim are amazing. So what's he really saying? What he's saying is, as far as this whole question is concerned, however you want to, limbo, a limbo period is different than an absolute change. Because the very fact that you know it's going to be Asur, and yet it's not yet Asur, that means you're matir it right now. Right? Or you're only Osir it later. I could say it either way. And that may mean that you've shut out, that you've excluded the remnants. The fact that we know it's going to change means we have to work to delay the change. That's the matir. Or that's the idea of a later oser, which is only going to affect certain things. So the point of the Noda Behuda is not so much the Matan Torah is different, but that a limbo period where we know it's going to change because of Matan Torah, but it's only going to change later. That's the issue. Which is why he explained that the Nor Buda talks of the following case. There was a guy who moved from one community to another, and in the community in which he lived, they didn't hold one of the takanos, the Rabbanan, let's say. What? Kamasagar. Yeah, correct. And then he moved to a place where they did hold the Chumrah of Kamasagar. So the guy who was originally asked, the posek who was asked the question, said, well, it depends on the Rosh. And then Rabbi Yehuda said, no, not at all. And for two reasons. Number one, because this isn't a limbo change. This is like Matan Torah. For the people who, that is, if you live in this community it's Osir. And when you move to this community, it becomes Osir. It's not that, there was a Matir and then later there's going to be an Osir. It's not comparable at all. That's where he has his diuk. In the Rush, only a neder lachar zman, meaning in 24 hours I'm making this neder. But not right now. That's one chiluk that he makes. The other chiluk that he makes is as follows. Also very fascinating. He says, listen, let's say a guy became a nazir. Would anybody ever say, so anybody who died before he became a nazir, that tumas meis doesn't apply to the nazir. Or all the... all the grape wine products that are already processed, they don't apply to this nazir because he just became a nazir now. So the old stuff that he brings with him, his whole basement, his whole cellar, is completely mutter. Right? Just the new wine, since he became a nazir, that'll be asur. So why not, according to the Rush? So obviously it's wrong. The question is, why is it wrong? Right? So his answer is, number one, what I said before, any immediate change without a limbo anticipating period, if it changes, it changes. It's a new world. It's the world of a nazir. Remnants, so who cares? That's number one. Number two, he says, the Iser Nazir existed prior to my Nazirus. It existed for someone else. Right, so if I become a Nazir, I buy into Nazirus, so I accept the history as well. Namely, for some other Nazir out there, or for some would-be Nazir, or you who could have made yourself a Nazir a month ago, a year ago. So, all the Motza Geffen and the Mace, they're all off limits. You can't compare that to Basar Nechira, which Likula Alma, for everybody, was Muta Lagamri, was a Heter Gamor. So he thinks that maybe these are the two deos in the Rush. Two deos in the Rush are the question, which of these nafkamina, which of these distinctions is correct? I think that one could be mechalik between Neder and Nidre Nazir, I should say, even within his own logic. And that is as follows. In other words, if I'm making a Neder, it's true that I could have made it previously and somebody else could make this neder. The question is, does that affect me and my world? Right. Nidre Nazirus might be different because in Nidre Nazirus, this is a question in Nazir. Right. In Nidre Nazirus, by accepting it, I'm essentially being noder, alayayin, and not have contact with mace. It's a regular neder, or it's a neder to be a Nazir, to be a Gavra Nazir. In other words, the institution of Nazirus isn't just the combination or the accumulation of its Isurim, there's a chalos called Nazirus. Right? That's the question, whether Nazirus is more like a Neder, more like a Shvua. So the point is his Ha'ara about, the potential of you or other people to do this earlier, right? Dictating that the issue of the Rush doesn't apply, I think that makes a lot more sense in something like the Zerus than it does in regular Nader. Okay, in any case, he thinks that the two deos really are mutually exclusive in the Rush. Okay. All right, just to sum up then, we're not going to say any more about this because it's just take too long. So just to conclude, the Rashi understands the whole sugya in terms of Drosh HaKabel. Schar, in general, the question of Drosh HaKabel Schar can be understood either in terms of, you know, extra credit or the value of Chefta Shel Talmud Torah, essentially. Chefta Shel Talmud Torah and the values that are relevant therefrom. I think one can distinguish between abstract sugyas, like Ben Sora Mora and Ira Nidachas, and history. And I think that the real question here is, when it comes to history itself, when is the way things developed and evolved, when is that conceptually, legally important as well? And in this sugya, I think it very well may be. I gave some other examples, in which case the Drosh HaKabel Schar is not just as, you know, history of the past, but history of the past, which, you know, is eye-opening, it's illuminating, and affects our understanding of the halachos and the values in the present. I think that is the proper approach for Rashi. And I gave some other examples of Drosh HaKabel Schar when one is involved just in applications that don't really reflect, aren't necessary for mastery of the values or of the ideas, that reflect further or highlight further or illumine any issues, not practical or theoretical. And then we moved on to the Rush. The Rush has this very unique approach to the problem. I think the point of the Rush is that this isn't history. He's not just saying, oh, it's okay because our nafgamina. I think he's saying more than that. What he's saying is, yeah, and therefore it's regular Drosh V'Kabel Schar as well. And then, of course, the examples that he gives are very fascinating because he universalizes the question. It's not just a question of Basa Nechira and Knesset L'Eretz Yisrael, which one could have understood in very, very specific terms, but he does seem to universalize. Now, how much he's universalizing is now up for grabs. Number one is the two deos cholek. Yom Shlomo is mechalek between them in terms of Shom B'nei Adam. Nota Bihuda understands that they argue. Nota Bihuda understands either way that Tuma is different than Machalos Asuros when it comes to Nevela, because that's a very important distinction. Nota Bihuda understands the Rush in general as being very circumscribed, very limited to cases of either limbo or where the, you know, there's no application by anybody else, never mind yourself, in the present, understands that to be one of those two to be the limitation of the Rush. I tried to explain, even conceptually, why that may be so in terms of the broader issues that I think the Rush is really dealing with, namely the question of Isur Gavra, Isur Chefza, something is mutter because it's matired, or simply because it was never osered. Is it osered, or are we taking away its matir? Again, within that, I'm not sure 100% that it's convincing which of these is going to be matir, the remnant, but I can see at least directions within this. And either way, the question of Matan Torah being different, an immediate change being different, and that possible distinction between the Darim and Neder Shel Nazir, I think makes sense as well. Okay, we'll stop there. Now, let's move on now to the beginning. Now we're just going to go straight. Let me just give you a few marmakomos first. First of all, I want to say a few more things about Hilchos Eretz Yisrael. In terms of the relationship to Shechitas Kodshim, that we discussed already, but a few other issues that come up. So the first thing we want to discuss is Hilchos Eretz Yisrael. So whatever we don't finish today, make sure you've seen the Tosis, again, the Rush, the Hagos Maimunios, Paragalot HaShechita, the Mordechai. We spoke about most of these things already. But also look at the Ran. The Ran in the back, right in the beginning of the Masechta. He asked the question about Nashim being Nemanos in Shechita. That's a very important issue. In my, I have this Oz V'Hadar, so he has the Kovetz Mefarshim on the Rush, which he quotes the Yavet. It's probably printed in the back of the Shas Gemara. He has a very important comment on Hilchos Eretz Yisrael based on, again, that the issue of Namanus that should be looked at as well. And also on the question of Namanus, we'll speak about it more fully later, but just for now, very quickly, the question whether or not Erecha Neman B'Yisurim applies to Shechita, just look very quickly at the Mordechai and Aptes and Aleph, and the Gemara says that Behema B'Chaya B'Yisur Omedes. So the Mordechai takes the opportunity to discuss the question of Erecha B'Cheskes Iser. Again, I don't want to get into the whole Sugin, Gittin, and Nivamas right now, but just very briefly, so we'll have a framework to discuss what we want to discuss about it. Look at it very quickly. Also the Arzarua in the beginning of the Shechita, if you get a chance. So that's in terms of Hilchos Eretz Yisrael. That'll take very quickly, because mostly we worked on that. Also look at the Ramah, and the Shach in Siman Aleph in Yoredeya, the question of Lora Inu Eina Raya, and if you get a chance, also just very quickly, the Gemara in Chulin Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis speaks about Bedikas Asake. The Rav thought that was important to this issue. The Gemara here, Yud Zayin Amud Beis, here. Starting from Amrav Chizda Minayin Bedikas Asake Min HaTorah Shenemar Shkatatem Bazeh. Just three or four lines, and the Rush there on Yud Zayin Amud Beis. I think it's Simon Chav Dalid. I'll look at that as well. And in connection with that, the Gemara in Erevin Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, just very quickly though, the Gemara speaks about whether there's a problem of being Mora HaRosh Shalom B'Fnei Rabo if you don't show the Sakin to a Chacham. Just very quickly, just, you know what I mean. Okay. So that's one. Then Tosas here, Shema Yikalkalu, very quickly, Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Also look at the Ramban on Shema Yikalkalu. Then I want to spend a few minutes on Malkus Betmura. I think I gave you already some Armakomas on that. Let me just repeat very quickly. Tosas here, Tosas on Beis Amid Aleph and Tmura, the two Deos. The Gemara in Tmura, Dalin Amid Beis, the question of Lavanita Klase, when you have two Lavin. And the Gemara in Tes Amid Aleph, that Tosas quotes, and the Rambam Shita in the beginning of Hilchos Tmura, the Rambam and the Nosa Kalim, particularly the Lecha Mishnah. What is the Rambam Shita about this issue? I told you to look at the Rambam Hilchos Chametz, also Perek Aleph, the Rambam's view of Ba'yira by Matze. Also look at Shagas Aryeh on that point, famous Shagas Aryeh, Simen Ayin Ches, very quickly. And for background, just a little, if you get a chance, the Rambam and Ramban and Shorish Tes. Again, we're going to move quickly through this, but Shorish Tes is a question of if you have more than one pasuk, but it seems like one lav with two psukim, how many do you count? How many malkios do you get? Okay, that's the question of Tmura. Then the Gemara has the discussion about Nedarim here, very, very quickly also. Just look at the Gemara on the parallel Gemara and Daf Tes, Amud Aleph and Amud Beis, and Nedarim, and the Ran there. Look at Rabbeinu Gershom here, Rashi here. Tosas here, obviously. Maybe I'll give you a few things to look at. I'm not sure. But also just look at the Ramban in the Perush Al HaTorah in Dvarim Chav Gimel Chav Gimel. That's the Pasuk. And also the Ramban, another important Ramban in Emor, if you get a chance, Perakov Beis Pasuk Tes. Maybe I'll have you look at the issue of Baal Ta'achar, the relationship between Baal Ta'achar and Baal Yachel. But again, we're going to go through it very quickly. Dvarim Chav Gimel Chav Gimel. Perek Chav Gimel Pasuk Chav Gimel. Okay, so we're going to get through this in the next day or so, hopefully. And then, again, to continue with the Shakla Vitaria, then we'll speak a little bit about Tomei Bechulin and Taras HaKodesh. I'll give you a few things to look at on that. The Tosas here and the Rambam I already told you to look at in the end of Hilchos Tumas Ochlin. We discussed it a little bit before Yom Kippur, but I'll just discuss it a little bit more. And in terms of Chulin al Taras HaKodesh, the Rambam's Psak, The Gemara in Nida, what is it? I think Rav Zayin Omer Aleph, where the Gemara speaks about this issue. What is the scope of the din of Achilas Chulin al Taharas HaKodesh? Okay, so that'll, we'll start with that. Okay, let me just say a few words before we adjourn for today. Let's just start with Hilchos Eretz Yisrael again, very quick. Oh yeah, one other thing about Hilchos Eretz Yisrael. I forgot. In the just the last line of the Tosas, Yishum de Bishar Avodos Noshim Psulos Afilu Kohanos. So again, just very quickly to look at the question of Nashim in Kodshim. That's important for our bigger picture, just have a sense of that. The Gemara in Zvachim, Dav Dalet Amud Aleph, again, this is on the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael issue, the end of it, the end of Tosis. The Gemara in Zvachim, Dav Dalet Amud Aleph, where the Gemara contrasts Shechita and Kabbalah. And the Girsa of the Shita Mekubetzes there, very famous. Whether Zar and Nashim are mentioned or just Zar. And that should be connected to the formulation of the Rambam in Hukos Bias Mikdash, Parak Tes Halacha Aleph and Tes Vav. And contrast that to Minchas Chinuch, Simin Reish, Mitzvah Reish Tzadi, Sivkot Naleph. Again, just very quickly, in other words, are women excluded from Avoda because they're the category of Zar, or because it's a din of, a special din of Bnei Aaron below Bnos Aaron? Might be relevant to what we're discussing here. Okay. So far, in terms of the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, what we've seen is what? Shlomo. Hilchos Eretz Yisrael has this famous Chiddush, right? First Tosis. The Nashim cannot do Shechita. And Balei Tosis say it's against the Gemara in Zvachim, because the Gemara there seems to say clearly that she can Shecht Kodshim. And we already suggested that maybe there's a pattern in Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, because even though Tosis only quotes it by Nashim, right? Some of the other Rishonim quoted for other things. The Rosh extends it to what other dinim? What other chidushim the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael had? If there's no bracha, it's ma'akev the shechita. And if there's arum, right? If it's not fully closed, it's ma'akev the shechita. And then the Mordechai goes even further with the formulations of pigul, pigul, pigul. Everything is pigul. Right? If he's not wearing a hat, if he's wearing a knitted yarmulke, not a whatever yarmulke. Everything is pigul, right? If you didn't get enough sleep the night before, pigul. If he's too old, it's pigul. If he's too young, it's pigul. Right? The Mordechai goes to town on pigul. We had discussed the idea of pigul. So he suggested that maybe Dafket works in Kodshim, but it's pigul and chulin in particular. Again, the Sefer Agur, which Oren brought to our attention, says that the bracha issue is limited to Kodshim. It's ma'akev only in Kodshim. And I was saying the opposite, that even if these things aren't ma'akev in Kodshim, that's because in Kodshim, the whole context and the real din of pigul already established that they are avodas. But to establish that shechita is an avoda in chulin, for that you have to have, a ceremonial and formal, and highly spiritual framework. And that's why you need the bracha, you need the clothing, right? Maybe it's limited to anashim, who are generally these kind of functionaries, and so on and so forth. Okay. There are other versions of what the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael is about, and that is in the Hagos Mamunios, and some other Rishonim as well, that it's based on. Daniel? Shema, before we get this, practical issue. Shema Yisale. Okay, so that's a practical question. If that's the case, then one should certainly be Mechalek between Anashim and Nashim, for sure, but either way, but let's say within Nashim themselves. Maybe, okay. That's very possible. And well, what's normally equated with Nashim? We have to discuss this still. Avadim. What would be the status of Avadim? Of course, at Avadim, there's an added wrinkle, so we haven't discussed this yet. Avadim in Shechita, on the one hand, you know, la mi'isha. On the other hand, there still might be miktsas, lack of Kedushas Yisrael in Eved. For certain dinim, the Eved remains with a tzad goy. So it could be that would be posel. So we have to figure out what is the status of Eved. If it's not the tzad goy and it's only bidin isha, so then Shema Yisalef obviously doesn't apply. Right, because he's a male. But it could be worse, depending on the question of tzad goy, and in general it might depend on what the nature of psul goy is, okay, which discussion of the Rishonim, which we'll get to, but not right now. So that's something to look out for. Shema Yisalef would be a different approach. Tosas here says Daton Kalos. Okay, we just don't know what that means exactly. Again, some Rishonim merge the two together. They say Daton Kalos Shema Yisalef, by which they simply mean that, you know, we don't trust that she has the, you know, proper focus for concentration or discipline for this particular event. Yeah.
According to the
it would have either one or the other. It's not clear that he does. I mean, he doesn't quote it in that context. But obviously, the bracha doesn't apply to Shemi Salah. Right. Okay. So what I wanted to bring up is the following question. I was suggesting that this has to do with the avoda, you know, aspect of things. But the women are effective in avoda, so I was explaining the idea of compensation. I think that that Rabbi Yaakov Emden in his Hagos, I just saw this a couple of days ago, also goes in this direction. He suggests that even if, of course, it's a big issue, according to those Rishonim who think that Shechitas Kesher Bizar, but L'chatchila, if there's access to a Kohen, once you go the Kohen route. So he says, Hu Adin Nashim, when there are Anashim available. And it's not just a mashal, or maybe he means, I'm not sure if he means it, it's more than a mashal, but I'd like to suggest that what he's basically saying is that Shechita is Kshera Bizar. But according to those Rishonim L'chatchila, you want to accent it as an avoda as much as possible, which is why you should, according to those Rishonim, you should opt for a Kohen if you can. So what Hilchos Eretz Yisrael is saying is that even in Chulin, we want this to be B'toras Avoda. And it's only B'toras Avoda, or full Avoda, when it's done by someone who can do the rest of the Avodos, even though we're talking about Chulin. In other words, it's basically what I was suggesting, the idea that I was suggesting all along. The difference is I was suggesting compensation. Namely, it's even more important that it be done by a person who's Roy L'Avoda, in Chulin, because you want to accentuate that the Shechita is all there is in its Avoda. And I think what he's saying is that even, according to the Rishonim, hold that even in Avoda there's a L'chatchila of a Kohen, so then we understand why L'chatchila there's, you know, it's preferred to have Ish. Now, I'm not saying that L'chatchila is preferred to have Kohen. Right? I think at that, you know, far we don't have to go. Right, so that's basically what, you know, a few little marmakomos that I gave you in the end there. Namely, why are even kohanos, because even a kohenes is mufka from the avoda. So, you know, ein b'mina osa avoda in a way. So whether that's an extension of Zar or Psul B'fnei Atzmo, I think either way it's very telling. Namely, if it's an extension of Zar, so it means L'inyan Avoda, you know, women just can't, their muf goes. Because they're not Zar L'inyan Truma, they're only Zar L'inyan Avoda. That seems to be Shita Sarama. And if it's a special exclusion, so one might say that the din of Zar doesn't apply to the Avoda of Chulin, but the Psul of Nashim as an Avoda, that applies even to Chulin. So I'm saying either explanation will establish that there's a qualitative difference between Anashim and Nashim beyond simply Yisrael and Kohen. Which is what I need to do in order to justify this. Again, I still hold my episode to show the compensation, but I'm just saying, in light of that suggestion of Yaakov Emden, you have a similar idea. Yeah.
Just to pull Shadas and Pelos in a third direction, outside of Shemri Sally, for something that might relate to the end of the Avoda issue, could be like in terms of Yediya, Hilchos, Shlita type of issue, pulling it closer to Chereshot to Bekatan in terms of Das in general. And in terms of Rashi on the rib as well, when Rashi brings these extra possibilities, he talks about like Yodei Hilchos Shlita.
Right.
And you know, like the way that the Rambam has it in the Sefer Mitzvos, where he spends four mitzvos talking about Yediyas HaSimanim, but that might be a category in Shlita as well. It's sort of Yediya of Hilchos Shlita.
Right, and why should Noshim be excluded from that?
In other words, that would be the fetish of Hilchos
Right. I mean, if somebody said it, you know, unless as you think that's what Datan Kalos means.
No, right. I think not that I'm advocating.
I understand.
It's not uncommon that we would.
Right. It's possible. I'm hesitant to say it just because, since I don't particularly like it, and I don't see anybody saying it, so you know, so why say it? But I hear what you're saying. If somebody said it, I wouldn't be shocked at all.
It also wouldn't be a separate statement. It would be part of the Gemara later when Gemara says Chol Chol.
Right, that you need to know you have to be a mumcha on the dinim. Right, if that were the case. What I think is a more fruitful approach is the issue which the Ran brings up, and that is the question of nemanus. Right, the Ran raises the question, we'll start with this tomorrow, that you know, even if you reject Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, what about the fact that Noshim are not nemanos b'isurim? So are Noshim nemanos b'isurim? So that's what the Ran discusses, and the Rajba in Taurus Abayas as well. And the Rishonim discusses in a number of of places. They're obviously to quote the Sefer called the Divrei Emes. He had a whole story about the Divrei Emes, and he always used to quote Siman Aleph, because Siman Aleph and Divrei Emes is where he has a long tshuva about whether Nashim are excluded from Erecha Nemun B'Surim. Erecha Nemun B'Surim limited only to Teksherim or not. But basically, it's what he tries to show in that siman is that it's Machlokas or Rishonim, Balitosis and Ritvas and Rajvas and different places, whether Erecha Nem Bisurim applies to Ksherim Le'edos only, or even to Psuliedos like Nashim. So the Ran raises the question, interesting in the context, but this will conclude for today, in the context of Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, discussing Hilchos Eretz Yisrael. He says Hilchos Eretz Yisrael is against the Gemara in Tzvachim. B'had amin in Perakam de Psachim, gabi bir cham et tzkivin de Rabbanan u emnu Rabbanan bed Rabbanan, al mahab darayis ala mehemni. The Gemara sounds in Psachim, David Amid Beis, that the only reason that we believe women and children about Bedikas Chametz is because Hemnu Rabbanan bid Rabbanan, because Bedikas Chametz is only Rabbanan, because Bittul takes care of the problem Daraisa. It sounds like if you needed Nemanus Daraisa, then women would not be able to accomplish that. So he says this in the context of his discussion of Hilchos Eretz Yisrael. Linyan Nashim, cause of Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, Nashim la Yishkul v'Shadat and Kalitz, V'Leisa, Tafilu v'Mukdash and Shokhtin, and then he brings all the Rayas. And he says, El avadei mashman and nashim shokhtas l'chadchila afilu b'mukdashya. And then he says, V'ha damrina b'perakama d'psachim. Aye, what about the nemanus issue? So, in light of that, it's not mukhrach, but one could raise the possibility that maybe what the Ran is really saying is that maybe there's another basis for Hilchos Eretz Yisrael. Okay. not the idea of avoda, and not datan kalos per se, and not shemi yisalef, but the question of nemanos. Namely, is it true, and there are two assumptions here, is it true that the gavra shochet has to have implicit nemanos? So if he doesn't tell you that it's no good, that you assume it's good, but that you're relying on him, do you need nemanos? If so, is she nemanos? So the v'hadam rinan, of course, relates to the second problem, but in the so again, it could be unrelated to Hilchos Eretz Yisrael. He's saying, women, of course, work, end of story, forget about Hilchos Eretz Yisrael. What about the fact that if you're going to let women do shechita, there's a second problem, namely, you need the implicit nemanos and they don't have it? That's the next issue. Or is he saying, but the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael really do have a point, notwithstanding the Gemara and Zvachim, namely, you know, the nemanos issue. That's the basis of Hilchos Eretz Yisrael. Again, as you said before, it wouldn't relate to the bracha or the aram. I think those require the religious, spiritual side of things. It would disconnect it from the Rush and the Mordechai's, you know, wider view, but the Bali Tosis, let's say, alone, or Tosis here, Tosis in Zvachim, actually, is why. So this possibility that maybe Hilchos Eretz Yisrael is based on Nemanos is something I want to look at very quickly, the question that it raises. And then one other possibility, and that's the Rav's suggestion. The Rav suggested, I'll just tell you now, and I'll just discuss some of the evidence tomorrow. The Rav suggested that this, I think I mentioned already once before, that this has to do with Minui and Srara. That Hilchos Eretz Yisrael is based on the idea of Som Tosum Alecha Melech Velo Malka, Kol Mesimos, that all Srara is limited to men, any public function. So the Rav wanted to suggest that at a certain point, Shechita was turned into, maybe only Drabanan, but it was turned into a public minui, a function. And for that reason, Nashim are excluded. That would also possibly work into Datan Kalos, but we'll speak about that tomorrow. So we'll finish up with the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, and then move on to the other issues straight.